Have you ever looked up at the sky from the Blue Ridge Parkway on a clear night? Really looked at it? Like Van Gogh looked at it in his Starry Night painting, full of dazzling lights and flowing energy and dark mystery. Well, something like that, Genesis tells us, is what ancient Abram did once on a dark night, 3,000 or so years ago. The writer tells us that he and Sarai were going through a dark time in their faith journey, a time of doubt and bewilderment about where they were going. God says, look toward heaven, count the stars, if you can count them. And he did. And it became a transcendent experience that rekindled Abram's waning trust in God's providence. Looking at the stars is always a transcendent experience, lifting us above ourselves in our little lives, to see the vast immensities that surround us and the holiness and mystery of it all. Makes us whistle radical amazement and kindles in the heart the reality we call faith. I recently heard a series of lectures by a British astronomer who spends a lot of time looking at the heavens. He took us on a fascinating tour through the far horizons of the universe that the Hubble and Watt telescopes are now revealing more fully than ever before in human history. We're now able to see light from over 13 billion years ago, just after the Big Bang. We can now estimate that there are some 60 billion planets just in our solar system, which is one of billions of solar systems. And the astrophysicists estimate that there are some 56 trillion planets across the universe. Now, in case you don't know what a sextillion is, it has 21 zeros. Yikes. The immensity of it all takes your breath away. These scientists of the universe also tell us that over 90% of what is out there and up there and around there is made up of what they call dark matter and dark energy. Can't see it, but they know it's there because it interacts with gravity. They don't know what it is, deepening the mystery of the whole shebang. What they do know is that the dynamic astrophysical forces of stars are burning and dying and exploding out there, what create the carbon and hydrogen and essential elements that make up life as we know it, reminding us that we are part of a vast, luminous web of life, and that our bodies are literally made of stardust. A friend of mine asked me how these amazing emerging facts about the universe impact my faith. Doesn't it all push God further and further out of the picture? My response is that it actually enlarges my faith. It makes my sense of God's grandeur even greater. The heavens declare the glory of God, the psalmist said. That's still true. And the more we know about them, the more glory there is. Too many people in our time have come to regard science and religion as opposites, sometimes even antagonists. Some misled fundamentalists believe this. and some fiercely secular scientists also. But to me, they are inseparable and ineluctably intertwined. Science doesn't push God out of the picture. It reveals more of the majesty and intelligence and beauty and sacredness of it all. The scientific mind's relentless pursuit of empirical facts and the one of life is one of God's great gifts. Haven't we been blessed by science in the modern age beyond our imagination? But the territory of faith is different. It's more concerned with meaning, the why of things, the purpose of things. Why is there such a grand universe at all? Why are we here? What is the meaning of everything? Surely the amazing order and richness of life on Earth, and that in the enormous universe, is not just random. How can all this be random, with all its beautiful design and mystery and vitality? Those are the kind of questions that faith grapples with. It's certainly true that faith and science have clashed over the centuries, not least because of the church's resistance to new scientific discovery. After all, we didn't treat Copernicus and Galileo and others very well. But also, sometimes because of science's Promethean claims to know it all. But the truth is, science and religion need each other. We need the why of things as well as the what of things. Walker Percy, one of my favorite Southern writers, once wrote an essay in which he said, in order to be human, we need what he called island news, which is where to find water, what food is safe to eat, how to boil corn, how to drive a car, E=MC², and all that sort of stuff. But the castaway on his island also needs to have what he calls news from beyond the island. News from beyond the island is about issues like, who am I? Why am I here? Where did I come from? What should I do? Both kinds of news are necessary for human flourishing. Many years before Christ, the psalmist wrote in Psalm 8, when I consider the heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars you've set in their courses, what is man that you should be mindful of him? The son of man that you should seek him out? Yet you've made him but a little lower than the angels and crowned him with glory and honor. When he looked at the heavens, he or she was overwhelmed by the vastness and mystery of the night sky, which spoke both of human smallness and also of the enormous wonder of human life, crowned with glory and honor. That vision kindled his faith in a loving and personal God who created these vast immensities, but also made human beings in his image with minds to think and comprehend it all. It was so with Abram when he went out and looked up at that sky and his dark night of the soul. He and Sarah had been wondering what God was up to. They had made sacrifice and sacrifice following his call, but his promises hadn't come to pass. I'll make you a great nation, God had said. I'll bless you so you can be a blessing. But so far, Sarah had not even been able to have a child. They had high hopes. They were being dashed on the hard scramble of life. And that happens to all of us in our journeys. But looking up at the vast Mesopotamian sky on that mysterious night reminds Abram of the grandeur of God and how their lives are part of a great story beyond his understanding. He's able to see light breaking through the darkness and see that his life has meaning and and he's able to go forward, taking another leap of faith. And the writer says, he believed the Lord, and the Lord reckoned it to him as righteousness. One of the great mystics of the medieval church, John of the Cross, called these kind of moments, moments of deep and dazzling darkness. Deep and dazzling darkness. When our spirit somehow connects to God's spirit, and we know that it makes sense, and we can believe in God's providence and promise and presence, which is what we call faith. Choosing to trust in God's providence means that your life and my life, like Abraham and Sarah's, are not just random flecks in a meaningless and inchoate universe. Our lives are not just newspaper clippings that disappear in yellowed folders of old books. They're not just jumbled jottings on a pen, voices that fade to silence. Life is not, as Macbeth said, a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury signifying nothing. That's the darkest nihilism. Faith means that your life, my life, even if we seem to be bit parts, most of the time, are essential pieces of a great story, God's story of life. Our lives have a plot. They're going somewhere, moving toward meaning. What we're able to do in our little lives is to bless the world, make a difference in some way for good. That's what Abram was able to believe again, and why he was able to keep going, even in the midst of his doubt and darkness. Winston Churchill famously said, "If you're going through hell, keep going." Those are words of faith. And it's not simple, is it? Abram and Sarai didn't know what to expect. They believed in God's goodness and promise, but their fear molecules got moving. They were afraid maybe it was meaningless, but they kept stepping into the unknown. As Hebrews says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. Henry Nouwen used to say, it's like a trapeze artist, letting go of that bar and tumbling through the air, catching the hands of the catcher. That is what faith feels like, as we again and again have to let go, let God, keep going. The poet once said beautifully, the steps of faith fall on the seeming void and find the rock beneath. You can't see that rock, but it's always there. The good and loving God who made us, holds us, and catches us to safety. I think maybe this is what Jesus meant in the gospel when he said, have no fear, little flock. It's the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Grace is given. It's always there. Look up. All we have to do is let go of our fear and hold out our hands to be caught by it. As the old hymn says, leaning on the everlasting arms, leaning on the everlasting arms, leaning. That's what old Abram was able to do when he looked up at the miraculous sky in his dark night. Grace is always there, always at work. Never stop looking up.